Fourth and final hour on this Monday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside at American Airlines Center in Dallas. Everything is wrapped up here. The Predators have left the building. They'll go back to the team hotel, probably take a nap, get some get a meal in them, and be back here for Game 6 tonight. Puck drop at 7:30, pregame at 6:30. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Don't forget to play ESPN The Game's Nashville's NHL playoff pick'em. Your chance to win some great Predators prizes, including tickets to a regular season home game next year, autograph Predators hockey pucks, team store gift cards, and an opportunity to join the Predators radio broadcasting duo in the booth and work with them during a home game next year. Go to thegamenashville.com for more details to sign up and enter your picks before the puck drops before each game of each round. This is a daily contest, so you have to make your picks prior to each game. Can the Predators push this to Game 7 tonight? Can the Carolina Hurricanes and Raleigh push it to Game 7 in their series against the Capitals? We head east. We go to Knoxville. We bring in Vince Ferrara from WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter. It's free. It's easy. Vinny, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Hey. Really sad news over the weekend. I couldn't believe when I saw that story, but the unfortunate passing of Reggie Cobb.
Yeah, area scout for the 49ers, only 50, way too soon. Gosh, so much outpouring of just love and appreciation and sadness over his passing from, you know, so many people involved in the program. He predated me, obviously, being here, but I remember him personally growing up in Tampa.
Oh, yeah.
As that second-round pick out of Tennessee for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and had his best year, ran for about 1,100 yards in one of his early seasons. So just always a really hard runner, and then going back and watching video, you just a big back that could run and break tackles, great balance, and obviously one of the more accomplished running backs in Tennessee history. Definitely sad, and saw, obviously the statement from John Lynch and the 49ers seems like they were shocked by the news and saddened, obviously, as well. And that's been the biggest thing, is just seeing how many people he touched and seemed to be a real class act. I never had a chance to personally meet him, but definitely made his huge mark with both the, all the NFL franchises, but definitely with the Tennessee family.
Yeah, sad story. Way too early for that. I want to know from you, what's your gut feeling? I know that you just went through spring practice and all that good stuff, and then there's going to be, some time off, and then they'll get back at it here in a couple months, and it'll be time for another football season. But I just want to know your gut feeling right now, what you think having a guy like Jim Chaney as the offensive coordinator, what that can do for Garantano moving forward. How much can that change what he brings to the table? Plus, he's going to be more experienced now that he got that full season under his belt. How much can that help him moving forward?
Well, I think it will help him. I think the challenge is that offensive line in front of him.
Okay.
I think they're going to find ways to try to get the ball into the hands of the playmakers and adjust best they can. I just think there's a limitation as to how much they can improve and how much of a impact Jim Chaney can have on Garantano, not just him statistically, but team win success. That offensive line, unless they're able to have completely different personnel and have Trey Smith as part of that, I think outside of that, I just don't see how they are going to be able to overcome that. And then as far as team success, including Garantano, you're limited on the defensive line as well. Garantano, I think, they'll do things like split out their running backs and keep them on the field, like a Ty Chandler. I'll use him a lot in the passing game. They'll utilize the tight ends more. I think they'll go to their strengths and their wide receiving core, try to get the ball out of the hands of Garantano so he's not taking hits and negative plays. They'll try to massage things and help Garantano from those things. But I just think ultimately, because of the offensive line, you're going to have a tough time generating enough big plays and consistency to where it can show out, and maybe people would consider Garantano a top five quarterback in the SEC. I don't think the team will have enough success. I don't think Garantano's numbers will be that drastically different, even though he'll be coached much better and coordinated much better. I just think there's sort of a ceiling with the personnel they have to deal with up front.
We talked about realistic goals for last season, the first year of Jeremy Pruitt, and what was left behind, what was in the cupboards. And so we were right on, right? We said between 5 and 7 wins. That's, we said 6 right. and 6 would be a really good season. So we were basically all over it on realistic expectations for last season. So what's the realistic expectation or number or numbers we should be throwing out going into this season, year number 2?
I think anything higher than 7 is too optimistic. I think they're instead of 5 or 6, they're 6 or 7. I think they'll be better. I really like all the coaching changes that they've made. I think it's all a positive. The defense made a big jump under year 1 with Pruitt. I think they'll do that again under Derek Ansley. I love the aspect of Jim Chaney running the offense and Jeremy Pruitt taking more of a head coach role, even though he'll be very involved in the defense, but not have his hands in that and let Jim Chaney sort of be the head coach of the offense with him obviously having some big picture say. I think all those things, T. Martin added to the staff, all these moves I think have been very, very positive. I just think when it comes down to the offensive and defensive lines, the two of the main three positions that you need to win along with quarterback in this conference, I just think the personnel is not there yet, despite the improvement in coaching. So that I think they can get to 7 wins. I don't think that's unrealistic. The schedule helps them from that standpoint also. I just think it's hopeful beyond 7 wins this year, I think.
I don't disagree with you, Vince. I think you're right on with the number. And let's say it's 6 and 6 or 7 and 5 this season. That's year 2. I guess the question I have, because you're there, you're in the market, we've talked about this a lot over the years. It's a fan base that's desperate to try to get back to winning football and being relevant and being in the picture to be playing in Atlanta and, talk about playoffs. And it feels like a long time ago since we've had realistic expectations of that when it comes to Vols football. So if that were the case and that plays out to 6 and 6 or 7 and 5 yet again, where's the fan base going to be? What's going to be the mood in Knoxville going into yet again another disappointing offseason?
Mad, cranky.
Yeah. It's going to be bad, isn't it?
Right. Maybe somewhere in between mad and cranky. But I think that won't be fair because the roster needs the makeover. People overlook this. Jeremy Pruitt still has a ton of Butch Jones's players. And even though I think he's reached some players and he's getting more out of some players, some players don't fit or just can't be salvaged. And that goes back to the responsibility that goes to a head coach in not just picking, getting highly rated classes, but getting the right players. And Jeremy Pruitt still has a roster with some guys that were highly rated that can't get on the field. And so until you turn that over and have all of Pruitt's guys, that's really the fairest assessment of Jeremy Pruitt, and that's not the situation yet. Even if guys have good kids, they're just trying to do the right thing, but just don't fit what they do, that's what he has to deal with right now. And, you know, fans are going to, I've said this before, and I really do believe it. Fans, when you see a pattern of improvement they want from a coach, what happened in year one, fans are going to expect year two to be the natural jump from where they thought you should be in year one to now that progression in year two. Not where you actually are coming from, which last year was five wins, but if fans thought, hey, why'd you lose? You shouldn't have lost the last couple of games to Vanderbilt and Missouri. So they should have been a seven-win team. We'll be better this year because of improved coaching, everybody's a year older, blah, blah, blah. So two more wins of that, and we should be about nine wins. So you continue where they thought you should have been. You don't get a pass to come from where you actually were, which is a five-win team. Natural progression from five wins should take you to seven. That's the reality. But I think a lot of fans think, well, we should have won, so we'll be better this year, so now our two-win improvement is nine. And I think that's where the expectation is going to be, and that's unrealistic and unfair, but I think fans will be mad. Not like UT's going to fire Pruitt, but I think a lot of fans are going to think in that regard.
We come back on the other side. Chase is going to talk to you about restocking those cupboards and also pick your brain on who's going to get drafted in Nashville starting on Thursday night. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the NFL draft will be conducted in our city. More with Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville. On the other side, you're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Live at American Airlines Center in Dallas, down in Big D. Yeah, game six tonight. Puck drop 7:30. Predators down 3-2 in the series. Pregame I'll have for you at 6:30. Chase will give you 30 minutes prior to pregame starting at 6. Can the Predators push this to game 7 Wednesday night at Bridgestone Arena? They're going to try to do what San Jose did last night and what Boston did in Toronto yesterday afternoon, pushing both of those series to game 7. You'll hear from both head coaches a little bit later this hour. Right now, talking with Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal down in over in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter.
All right, I have a question for you guys. I'm going to see if you guys can name. In the past 8 NFL drafts, there have been 3 Vols players taken in the first round.
The past 8 years?
Yes.
I'll start. We'll just go back and forth, Vince. Derek Barnett.
That is correct.
Eric Berry.
No.
No. Oh, I was going to guess that. Was that?
Cordero Patterson's another one.
Yep. That's one.
Ooh. Ooh. And who would be the other one? One other one in the last 8 years gone in the first round.
Yep.
Justin Hunter went in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm at a loss. Who we got?
Juwan James, 2014.
Oh.
So yeah, I guess Barry would be just beyond 8.
I was going to say, yeah. It must have been just past 8 years, because I was going to say Eric Berry next.
I was reading this on Saturday Down South, an article they put out there. So those 3 are the only first-rounders in the past 8 NFL drafts. During that time span, only 17 former Vols have been drafted altogether. And if you go and you look at the previous 8 seasons, so from 2003 to 2010, the Vols had 36 players selected, including 7 first-round selections. And so my question, Vince, to kind of start this off with the draft in Nashville, I mean, when can we expect to see some first-round Vols again? I mean, it's obviously not going to be this year, but do we think in the next few seasons that they're going to have some guys selected in the first round?
First round, I don't see it. I think the best chance would be and has been on the roster would be a healthy Trey Smith, but he's always going to have that medical. I think he was on track to absolutely be a first round draft pick, but now he's got to just get back on the field, one, and then two, how much is that going to deter the NFL folks when you're talking about something like that. We've certainly seen guys that have first-round ability be taken off of some team's board altogether. He's a junior, so he would be one. We'll see how the medical plays out. That's really the only one on the radar that I can see in terms of a first round. They'll have more draftable guys, and Juwan Jennings, Nigel Warrior, maybe still in a couple of years, only a sophomore, Bryce Thompson or Alante Taylor, Ty Chandler, draftable, Callaway. They've got guys that will be at least draftable, and it'll be Dominic Wood Anderson. But I don't see any, as guys sit right now, not knowing what the true freshmen look like, I don't see any first-rounders on this roster right now.
I noticed you didn't mention Juwan Jennings.
Jennings first one. I think he's draftable, but he's not first round. He just doesn't have that elite speed.
Well, and I think even if he has a breakout, just an awesome 2019 season, there are going to be things that people are going to still go back to, NFL scouts and front office people are going to go back to with him from his past that could hurt his draft stock.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I think he's always going to have to answer those things. However, he seems to have matured a lot, and I think they'll be so far in his past if he has a really good year, and I think he could have a career high in catches over 40. In talking to him personally, I do think he is matured to leadership. So I think those are things he can overcome. I think it's more of the 40 speed and that kind of stuff with him.
Vince Ferrara on the line with us. So with all that said, obviously here in Nashville, back in Nashville, we're in Dallas, there's a lot of hype with the NFL draft and what the Titans are going to do at 19. But what is the pulse like there in Knoxville with, Vols not mentioned in the first round and not a lot of hype with that? Are fans curious of what's going to happen, or is it just kind of just a second thought?
No, Chase, it really, when Tennessee players are not heavily involved, it really takes a lot of the juice out of the draft for Vols fans. The player, if you count not only just the Tennessee players, but guys that once played at Tennessee, and there's a handful of them, Venzel Bulware, who went to Miami, Daniel Helm, tight end, who went to Duke, Nico Kramer went to Eastern Kentucky as a tight end. And then the best of the bunch in Jalen Hurd at Baylor. I think those that, even with that, fans are not into it. I think the hardcore football fans are, but Vols fans, it takes away from their overall interest in the draft. And I think Jalen Hurd is probably going to be, even though fans don't want to include those guys as VFLs, especially the way he left, but he's going to be the one guy that played at Tennessee at any point in his career that will be taken the highest. I know Mike Dettillier had him in the fourth round to the Cowboys, but he's probably in that 3-5 round range with how he bounced back and showed he could play receiver this year. But I don't think they're going to get anybody else drafted. The closest might be a Kyle Phillips, late round, but I don't really see happening. So yeah, it's gonna be rough. And I know Charles Davis, his VFL, is gonna take more heat from Daniel Jeremiah like he typically does about the lack of Tennessee players in the draft.
Well, and I think when you look at it too, from a recruiting standpoint, Jeremy Pruitt's job is to get the best players in there, and clearly, to a young kid wanting to go there, if he's seeing a ton of players getting drafted into the NFL, whether it's the first, second, third round, it doesn't matter. And the fact that you're not seeing a ton, that has to hurt recruiting.
Well, short term, yes, it's probably something they're having to overcome now. But my guess is a lot of those recruiting pamphlets and flyers and all that have the NFL players that Jeremy Pruitt has already put in the league, players that he coached in the league, a lot of them being from Alabama, Georgia, and Florida State. So I think he's still new enough to where he can use some of that, but eventually you have to deliver at Tennessee. And if they are really improved this year and he's getting player development, and then guys that right now, as you asked me earlier, don't look like higher round picks develop into that with player development, that's how you do it. And Nick Saban, eventually, that was like the last step he had, because he had that too. They were winning, but they weren't putting guys in the league. It took them a couple years. But when he finally did, that's sort of the last step. And you know, they've got to do it through player development, at least in the short term.
What's been the fallout of, I can't remember if we touched on this last week or not, Vince, but just the fallout of Rick Barnes's comments at the press conference, just being very candid and openly honest about, you know, he was going to take the UCLA job, but they weren't willing to purchase his buyout, and so therefore he didn't take it. What's been kind of the fallout as we sit here kind of a week later?
We're still taking calls on it.
Yeah,
I mean, I was on the afternoon show at the end of last week, and there's still people calling and talking about it. And you know, the biggest thing here's sort of the timeline, my understanding of how it played out. UCLA approached Rick Barnes, his financial advisor, and then obviously he became involved in that. In talking to UCLA, they made him an offer. He went to Tennessee and told them about that offer, and that's when they countered. And then Rick Barnes thought about it, and during that time, after he had the counteroffer from Tennessee, he found out that UCLA wasn't willing to pay the entire buyout, that he would have to pay for some of it and therefore get taxed on it and really cut down what the reality of that contract would be. That's the mistake they also made with Jamie Dixon when they went after him with his even higher buyout. And so that ended up being the deal breaker. And he was asked about in the press conference, if UCLA had paid the buyout, do you think that you would be UCLA's coach? And he said that he thought so. He thought he would be. That's thought. That's not absolute. And he also mentioned that he was looking for clarity from God as to what he should do. And he relied on his faith that some kind of signal would tell him where he should be at Tennessee. And he said he felt like that Tennessee should be was where God wanted him to be. And fans, a lot of them, did not like the fact that he said it was because God wanted him to be at Tennessee. They look at it as he didn't want to be at Tennessee. It was about the money. But I think a sign, you know, in faith and money can both be there. They're not mutually exclusive. So, you know, just I think there was that. My question I had that seems to still be there and maybe still bother some people is, even he wanted to be shown some love by Tennessee, and they did with that counteroffer. But probably a good chance, even with that love being shown, with that new deal, the counteroffer, if UCLA ponies up, then there's a good chance it probably still goes, even with that love shown. So I think that might be another little thing that some fans have a hard time with. But you know how fans are, man. They're just it's probably some of the Pearl people, and this is just giving them more fuel. And then there's the disappointment in the tournament because they didn't go as deep as they wanted to. So yeah, there's been a mixed reaction. Others come into his defense, and then some certainly mad. So it has not gone away quickly.
Last thing quickly, Vince, nice sweep for UT in Lexington over the Wildcats.
Wow, goodness. Tennessee, obviously, in sweeping
they dominated
Kentucky. Yeah, absolutely they did. And it's the best start in school history. First 30-win season since 2014. First series win over a top-five team since 2016, which they've done now a couple of times. What they did against Georgia last week. And it was a first sweep of an SEC opponent since 2008. They did it against Georgia. Also, first time through 18 games in SEC play that Tennessee has been at 500 or above since 2008. I mean, you just go on and on with all these things that haven't happened in a long time. RPI is at 8, and RPI projects them to finish the season, get this, 41-15, 18-12 in the SEC. I mean, how different is that from all the struggles? And right now, around 500 in the SEC, hosting a regional is in the conversation for Tennessee. Just
wow.
Amazing in year two for Tony Vitello. At Arkansas this weekend, who just swept number two Mississippi State. So it'll be difficult. They have some tough years ahead. But, man, they're really, really confident right now, and that confidence has grown.
Wow, good stuff. Vince, really appreciate it. You have a great week. And, man, we'll have tons to discuss next Monday.
Yep, no doubt. All right, you guys have fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right,
me.
Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. We'll come back. He joins us every Monday on the program. Normally at noon, we pushed him back an hour today because of special circumstances being down here in Dallas. We'll come back, hear from both head coaches of the Stars and the Preds next on 102.5 The Game. Going to join the cure for our friends. It's the annual charity golf tournament that benefits cystic fibrosis. That's Saturday, May 4th at Pine Creek Golf Club. This golf tournament is their biggest event of the year. They're offering 8 in the morning and 1 p.m. tee time. So we've got a morning flight and a 1 o'clock in the afternoon flight. Breakfast and lunch is served, as well as snacks and beverages on the course, catered dinner by courtesy of Mount Juliet, Courtney's of Mount Juliet, excuse me. For more information, go to thegamenashville.com and click on the events tab. Once again, join Cure for Our Friends. It's their annual charity golf tournament. That is Saturday, May 4th. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here at the AAC in Dallas. Game 6 tonight, puck drop at 7:30, pregame at 6:30. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Head coach Peter Laviolette spoke after morning skate.
Peter, your group's been through enough not to be fazed by any situation, but what is the process like for a team to go into a game like tonight without worrying about what the consequences might be if things don't go right?
Well, there's definitely going to be a result at the end of the night. I don't think you worry too much about the result. I think you worry more about the process and getting the guys ready. I mean, you do your best to work through what happened the game before and the areas that you need to be better and the things that you need to change. Eventually the page has to turn. You got to start focusing on the game at hand and preparing for this game. And, you know, through the time that you're allowed, it's always good in the playoffs. There's always that day in between, sometimes 2 days. You know, you get that opportunity to meet with your team and, like I said, move past one and move into the next. But our guys will be ready to play tonight. We have plenty of time to talk and get things on the table on what we need to do.
Colton was saying that as a player, he kind of lives for a moment like this, a big game like this. Do you appreciate a challenge like this? I know you don't want to be in this situation, but...
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, through a run, however long it goes, right, you hope it's 4 series and a win at the end. You know, you hope you win the last second on the clock. And there's always going to be times where you're challenged as a group on most runs to being a champion. There's times where you're challenged. And, you know, those are the times, I think, that solidifies your group. You know, would we rather be up 3-2? Sure. But we're not. We got to win a hockey game tonight. Once we win a hockey game today, we'll wake up tomorrow and we'll deal with it when it comes. But I think that there's confidence in our group and to be able to understand what we need to do in order to be successful and then to execute it. So we'll be ready to play.
Peter, you spoke after Game 5 of some of the unforced errors that your team had. Does that make it, for lack of a better term, more easily correctable coming into Game 6?
I do think they're somewhat correctable, yeah. I mean, you go back and look at the goals and the way they happened. I mean, it's really difficult to fault your goaltender when they're big blunders like that. And that was the difference in that game. You know, the difference in that first game was those 3 power play goals in the first period, and you're chasing, you know, the specialty games at 3-0 at the end of the night. Like, it's going to be rare to overcome that. And so last game, it's easy. It wasn't the quantity, it was the quality of the chances that we gave up. And that's what we talked about. I think that those things are controllable and they need to be better.
There you go. Peter LaViolette after morning skate. The biggest key for you, for them to push this to seven, the biggest key for them tonight is what?
The Jofa line has to play like the Jofa line. You know what they're going to, what Dallas is going to bring with that top line. You have to match it with your top line tonight. And so far in this series, we just haven't seen enough out of that top line. Now, you can give credit to Dallas, and we know what type of team they are defensively. They have done a good job of shutting down that line. But with the struggles that they have with secondary scoring, with the, whether it's the second line or the third line or, you know, whatever, anyone outside of Rocco Grimaldi in this series, they have to get that top line to step up if they want to win this hockey game tonight. I believe they have it in them. We've seen some flashes here and there, but they're going to have to do that tonight. And then, you know, secondly, defensively, you got to help out Pecorine. Just flat out have to help out the goaltender.
Yeah. So, no doubt about it. And he was clearly, visibly frustrated after the Game 5 loss Saturday afternoon. I mean, you could hear it in his voice. I wasn't down there. We played the audio. You were down there, and you could hear it in his voice. And, you know, he was not happy. He was frustrated and very, very candid, I thought, with the media after Saturday's 5-3 loss.
Yeah, and he should be. I mean, I understand his frustration because anyone that – and you know, I'm going to preface this by saying I know there are a lot of new hockey fans in our city that still don't understand all the little ins and outs. But if you watch the games and you're just paying attention to the play on the ice, this is not all on Pecorine. Pekka has done the best that he can do with this situation. He's just not getting a ton of help in front of him. And, you know, you and I were having this conversation. If you go to UC Soros, does it look any different? I don't think so, because I just think defensively they haven't been what they should be.
Put Ben Bishop in their net, it doesn't change. Nothing changes.
Right.
If the play in front is the play in front, no matter who, insert X in net, pick one. I don't believe the results are different. Quite honestly, you know, for people that are down on Pecorine, if it wasn't for his play in this series, I think the series would already be over.
Yeah.
I mean, he stole game three. So that would mean the Stars skate away with a 4-1 series win. I mean, he stole game three. I honestly feel like if it wasn't for his play, that's the reason they're still alive. That's the reason we're sitting here still talking about a game six tonight.
Yeah, I just think it's to be blunt, it's a lazy argument to always go to Pecorine is the problem. Pull Pecorine, because that's just – it's like a quarterback. It's, oh, yeah, that quarterback's terrible. Go to the backup. Go to the backup. Well, okay, you think Blaine Gabbert was going to win you a ton of games if you bench Marcus Mariota? Okay, yeah. Well, we saw how that turned out against Indy. That's my point. It's just – it's weak, and they got to play better in front of him. They got to help him offensively, and if none of that comes together, then they're probably not winning the game tonight. And I'm not trying to be doom and gloom. I'm telling it like it is. What I've seen in these first five games, this team has not played to the potential that they have with that talent and with that roster. And they're going to have to snap out of whatever it is, and they're going to have to play tonight.
How could anybody honestly say doom and gloom? I mean, and I know there are. I know what
you're saying.
I mean, if you've watched the series, I mean, what else are you supposed to describe right now at this point? Maybe doom and gloom is not the right word, but if you're talking about what has transpired in the last three games, I don't know where you think it's going to be rosy and fun. I mean, what's fun about talking about getting outplayed?
Yeah.
I mean, getting outplayed badly.
And
did we expect that coming into the series? Well, no. I mean, nobody expected that. Like I said before, earlier in the show, I'm the one, and I know there were other people who felt this way, but I'm the one that I went on television locally. I went on news, too, and said, look, if you're asking me to pick their opponent, it's Dallas.
Yeah.
And I haven't changed that because people are now like, well, it doesn't look like Dallas was the best matchup. No, yes, it does. If it wasn't Dallas, the series would be over.
Yeah, we would not be having this conversation right now if they were playing
St. Louis. If you play like this against anybody in the playoffs, you're going to be in this hole or done in any series. So Dallas was still the right opponent. I think because it's Dallas, if it's St. Louis, hell, I'd throw Colorado in there. The series may be over with the same play against that opponent. If you think Dallas's first line is good, have you looked at Colorado's first line?
Yeah.
It's the best in the league.
We saw it last year.
It's the best in the league.
Yeah. And look, it doesn't surprise me that Colorado's in the position they're in because of what I saw last year. This is what I'll say, Darren. I'm not in there in their meetings. I'm there, you know, a lot, post-game, pre-game. You are as well. But it's my hope that if anyone can motivate this team to go out there and play the best game they've played all year, it's their goaltender,
Pekarinen. Yeah, you're right.
And if he's angry and he's showing that anger, it's if I'm sitting there, you know, in that locker room, I'm going, oh, man, this is my guy. This is my hero. And I've made him I've ticked him off. What do I got to do? I got to find it deep down in myself. Whatever you got to do, that's what this team has to do.
Yep, no doubt. Look, if there's you're right. If there's a guy that can deliver the speech in that room that could change everything, it is indeed Pekarinen. He certainly has the clout in that room. Let's come back and wrap up Monday's edition of Darren and Donick on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A couple minutes ago during the break, the Nashville Sounds tweeted out a picture of their guitar at First Tennessee Park. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Trying to give the Predators some inspiration to win here in Dallas. A Stand With Us guitar, a gold guitar at First Tennessee Park. Pretty cool stuff. Go check it out at Nashville Sounds on Twitter. So tonight, two games. That's it. The other one is in Raleigh, North Carolina. So Toronto had an opportunity at home yesterday afternoon to close out that series, and the Leafs go into the second round. All they had to do was beat Boston at home, and the Bruins got the win. Bruins were in control most of that game. Bruins win 4-2, so they push that to 7, so they're going to Boston for Game 7 on Tuesday night. The other one was San Jose. A lot of people, including me, had them dead. Martin Jones looked awful.
Dead and buried and
the
gone.
The Sharks
gone.
Looked like the Sharks team we saw down the stretch. At one point went 1-9 in their last 10. They just were awful in the month of March and the beginning of April. And you just thought it looked like Vegas was going to go on and polish them off. Well, the Sharks get it done in double overtime in Vegas. Martin Jones has 352 saves in that game, or something like that.
It's
what it felt like.
57, I think. It was a record.
And the Sharks get the win. And so now that's going back to Northern California, and that'll be played on Tuesday night. That'll be a 9 o'clock puck drop in Nashville time. So two series going to Game 7, and then the two series tonight in Raleigh. Can the Hurricanes keep that series alive and push it to 7? They can do that at home. The Predators will have to do it on the road. And what's interesting, in the Capitals Hurricane Series, which was actually, by the way, congratulations to the St. Louis Blues. Remember, they were that series in the first five games was only the fourth time ever in NHL history that the first five games in a playoff series in a best of seven, the road teams won.
Yeah.
No series had ever had the first six games
right. Have
the road team win them all. And St. Louis held true to form, they won at home. And so, yet again, still, nobody's ever had a series where the first six games were won by the road team because the Blues close it out and they eliminate the Jets. And so St. Louis will await the winner of the Predators and Stars. So can two more series push this thing to 7 tonight?
What's interesting, before I answer that, is if you look at the bracket, and I think you and I have talked about this a little bit, but when the seedings came out and the matchups came out, I had this thought of, all right, this could be a year where the lower seeded teams win in the first round, more so than maybe we've seen in years past. Now, I know the Islanders were a higher seed than Pittsburgh, but I still look at that
as that's
kind of an upset.
It is a slight upset, I would say. If you're being honest, just because of the history of the Penguins and what they've done and the Islanders.
I didn't expect a sweep.
No, nobody.
So
nobody would have expected that.
We know what Columbus is. That's a ginormous upset. If Carolina, you know, forces a game 7, I think that's a little surprising. Now, some people really liked Carolina and the way they were playing. I was high on them, but I didn't see them getting out of this series. So, you know, that's another one that you can look at. Toronto, Boston's going the way that we thought it would, and then in the West, St. Louis. wouldn't really call that an upset. I think that one went the way it should. Dallas would be an upset if they're to win. And then Colorado, for sure, is an upset over Calgary. So I just think this has been an interesting year with the playoffs of some of these lower-seeded teams definitely making things interesting. As for forcing more Game 7s, I think Carolina does it. I think Carolina does it tonight. The bunch of jerks get it done.
At home?
That crowd's going to will them. You know, I just think they play well there. They have gotten them back into the series, you know, when they've gone back to Raleigh.
Well, they won both games in Raleigh, but Washington won all three games in Washington. So the home teams have thrived in that series.
So I think that continues tonight, and then Washington probably takes a game 7 at home. But I think that Carolina forces it tonight. I know what you're going to ask me next, and I don't really know the answer.
Oh, okay. By the way, my bracket is a bloody mess.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's a mess. I was awful in my predictions.
Mine is, too. I'm just you know, bragging about picking Colorado. So
The only thing I can't believe is I did pick St. Louis, so I actually picked that correctly. I took San Jose, and I thought that was a disastrous pick, and they've got an opportunity for me to be right. I picked Calgary. That was a bad pick. And, of course, I have Nashville beating the Stars, and we'll see if that can hang in there and be pushed to 7. I had Washington winning that series against the Hurricanes. I had, even though I wanted to pick the Islanders, I picked Pittsburgh because of the experience. That was a losing pick. I took Boston with confidence. I didn't even think it was going to be that close of a series. Now it's in 7, so I could still be right, but I don't think I would have, if you would have asked me before the series if it was going 7. Tampa Bay, you know, obviously, nobody thought that. I mean, I was like, no, they're not losing to Columbus. So I haven't been great with my picks. So that will do it for us. Can it get pushed to 7? We will find out tonight. 7:30 puck drop.
Preds win 3-2.
All right. There you go. I hope you're right. 3 has been the magic number, has it not?
Yep.
For the Predators. We'll find out tonight. 6:30 pregame. Chase will have some special coverage at 6 o'clock. You have a great rest of your day. What will we be talking about tomorrow? I don't know. Have to stay tuned and find out. We'll talk to you then. 10 a.m. See you then.